Hi there. You're listening to Treetop Talks. This is, this is our first episode here. This podcast, we talk about all things plant-related. Specifically, today we're going to be talking about species selection and the white spruce. Before we get too far into that, though, let's go through some introductions and kind of tell you who we are and what we plan on doing with this podcast. I am Jay Halasek. I'm an undergraduate, about to be a graduate, from the University of Wisconsin-River Falls. I'm going to have a four-year Bachelor of Science degree in horticulture. I've grown up in the industry in a small local greenhouse that my dad started, and been around plants my whole life, and I just absolutely love it. And with me today, and, well, every day in these podcasts, is my associate, Mr. Sherwood, so I'll let him introduce himself, and he can kind of tell you a little bit about what we're going to hope to accomplish here.
Hey guys, I'm Andy Sherwood. I'm also a student at University of Wisconsin-River Falls. I'll be graduating here in May also. Have my Bachelor of Science degree in horticulture. This summer I'll be starting off some plant breeding internships, which is the profession I'm looking to get into specifically. So then next year I'll be going off to graduate school somewhere and studying plant breeding more in depth. So for this podcast, we're really looking to give you guys some good general knowledge of plants in general, but really specifically trees as our focus. Jay, you got anything else to add to that? I mean, main thing there.
Yeah, I'm gonna throw some background music on here. Today this background music comes to us via Led Zeppelin. This is obviously not my music. Hopefully I don't get sued for having this in the background or something outrageous, but yeah, it's going to be a real laid-back podcast. We're going to hopefully try and relate some stuff to you guys that you might not have known about before. And we really are striving for practical, applicable knowledge here. So.
And our setup for each episode is we're going to have one main topic, and then we're going to try and cover one tree or other plant species and just kind of give you a gist of why that topic's important, tell you something about it, and then same with that species of plant. So, let's get into it.
Species selection.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Sherwood, what would you think one of the most important things is when selecting a species? If you had to really boil it down to, like, a sentence answer, blank is probably a very important factor in selecting a species.
Well, the right tree in the right place is definitely priority number one. And site selection is something we're going to cover in a future episode here, but as far as species selection goes, when you want to pick out an individual tree for any given location, the most important thing is knowing the tree and what you want to get out of it. Are you looking for a conifer needle-bearing tree, or do you want something with broad leaves that might drop its leaves in the winter in these northern climates? Or do you want something that's really known for its, you know, really great flower production, or even a fruiting tree? So,
you know, yeah, I would totally agree with what you got going there. I think site selection is probably one of the most important things. And like you said, we're going to touch on that later. But as far as being a homeowner, you know, you got to really ask yourself, what are you looking to get out of this tree? You know, are you a guy that really likes wildlife? You like to see birds. You want something that's really going to bring in the wildlife and squirrels and everything. Or are you that homeowner that really is just looking to have a unique tree in your yard that when someone drives down your block, your house stands out because of that tree? You got a lot of flexibility, but the definite most important thing would be site selection. So to just briefly touch on that too, you know, Mr. Sherwood, can you define for us zones, hardiness zones, what those are and how they play a role in when you're selecting any type of plant, really, and what protocol is to look for when you see zones on a plant label?
Yeah, the zones are set up by the USDA, and they're based on the minimum winter temperature from a 30-year average. So we're here in River Falls. This is Zone 4. Which means that we have a zone 4, which means that we have a negative 30 degree Fahrenheit average low temperature for the past 30 years anyway. So this, of course, fluctuates based on the winter. Sometimes it's not as cold. Sometimes it might even get colder. And there's a lot of different things that can change that, but on average, that's really what the zone is talking about. So making sure you know what your zone is, it's pretty easy to find out. You can just type right into Google, zip code, USDA hardiness zone. That's really, you know, it'll pop up with what you have, and any plant sold has to say what zones it's hardy to. Right, so just as long as you're within that range of zones, your plant should make it.
And now I'm going to kind of go off of what he said there too and say, just because it says it on the label, if you live in the zone 3 and you have a plant that you want to buy and it's maximum is zone 3, I'd tread with caution because, you know, we have global climate change going on, the zones are changing a little bit, and there's some people out there that would like to label their products in places that they claim it grows really well, but it might not grow very well. And especially if you're in the northern climate and you're pushing that northern zone limit, be very, very careful because we have some pretty harsh winters up here in the north. And like Andy said, it only takes into account the lowest temperature. It doesn't take into account fluctuations, which really, really cause more damage to your plant than anything, I would say.
Yeah, and I guess I didn't really clarify. The lower numbers represent colder temperatures, higher numbers, warmer temperatures, absolutely. Just to clarify. But going back to the labels, I mean, from a plant breeder's perspective, I often find that plants aren't really trialed to the extent that they should be.
I would agree with
in
that.
In a lot of cases. And so when a company releases a new plant variety, they'll just throw a number on there and say it's probably hardy to this zone based on what species it is, even though they may not have really tested it very well in that zone. So it is something to take with a grain of salt, but typically it's a good general rule of thumb to follow.
I like to have about a one zone buffer on either side. If I'm in a zone 3 environment, I'm probably not going to buy something that's only hardy to zone 3. You know, I'd be wanting something that's definitely hardy to zone 4, you know, or in the southern climates even. If I am in zone 8, I'm not going to buy a plant that is only hardy to zone 8 or 7 even. You know, I'd want something hardy to zone 9 just because you really want to be sure that when you plant this tree, it's going to live, it's going to thrive, and it's just going to be healthy. So with that, I want to kind of bounce into our next topic here, which is talking about some of the characteristics on trees. And, you know, as a homeowner, we want certain aesthetic appeal with our trees. We want it to be well-branched. We want this big, full canopy, and we want it to look healthy. So depending on really what you want, there's a tree out there that'll fit what you need. So, Mr. Sherwood, I'm going to ask you another question here.
Yeah.
What do you think would be a very common tree for people to plant in the north who want a nice tall tree with a full canopy and, you know, a nice fall color when the leaves start to change? That's what they're looking for. You know, big tree, full canopy.
Yeah.
What do you got for them?
Maple, really. There's a few different species of maple you can go with. Sugar maple is great for fall color, but they're a little pickier about where they're going to want to be. If you have the right site for it, big open space, sugar maple is awesome. If you have a tight space with compact soil, you're going to be better off with something like a Freeman maple or maybe even a silver maple or something along those lines.
For sure. And now to kind of go off that maple usage, because I totally agree. I think maples are a great tree for any homeowner to have in their yard. They have this gorgeous color to them in the fall. And I think where a lot of people can go wrong with a maple is they don't prune it when it's young. And that is just so important for any tree, but especially maples, because they grow really, really vigorously. Now let me define that word. It means they put out a lot of new branches every year. And, you know, a tree is not necessarily concerned about looking great and having this perfect form. It wants to put out as many new branches as it can so it can put out as many new leaves as it can and get as much energy as it can. That's what it's focused on. So if you want this maple to really be a centerpiece in your yard, early pruning practices is an absolute must, or you're going to end up with this massive amount of wild branches going in every direction. And it's sad because I see this all too often in people's yards where they have the perfect tree in the perfect location, but they just don't take the time each year to go out there and properly give it a good trimming. And so but I would totally agree that maples, if you're looking for something that's tall, upright, and full and has beautiful color, in the northern climate, you can't beat a sugar maple or even a red maple or some of the new, like they got like Freeman maples now, mm-hmm. and just a really, really wide variety of selection there.
Yeah, and actually, while you were talking about pruning, I was kind of thinking that the first 5 to 10 years are super important. Those are the formative mm-hmm. years of your tree's Correct. Life. So during those first 5 to 10 years, you really need to be paying attention to your tree annually as far as pruning goes, just getting rid of those bad branches, which we'll talk more about pruning right. specifically again
we,
in the later
We'll likely
episode.
Have a podcast about really, you know, diving into how to prune, and we'll probably provide you with some resources in that mm-hmm. podcast to really go out and research how to prune, because that's where I feel a lot of homeowners will go wrong. They don't know what they're doing, and I don't blame them. They don't want to mess up their tree, but
it's a tricky thing if you don't know what you're doing.
It really is.
And really, when in doubt, call an arborist.
Right.
But at the same time,
a lot of great resources
yeah,
out there.
Doing nothing is definitely worse than even just trying something in most cases.
Sure. So yeah, back to species selection. Let's say you're a homeowner out there and you say, okay, yeah, you know, maples are cool, but I want something with year-round potential. Mm-hmm. Which means you're gonna want an evergreen of some kind. And some of the most common evergreens, we're gonna be talking about a great one later in this podcast, the white spruce, but you have a lot more evergreen choices than just the white spruce. I mean, you got pines, junipers, what else you got over there?
I mean,
there's
a whole group of plants that are commonly called cedars, which, in at least in this part of the U.S., none of them are actually truly cedars. But,
correct.
You know, what we call white cedar is also a great, great evergreen conifer tree up here. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, with those, it's really important to remember how many different options you have for needle colors and textures, even.
Right.
Because not all trees are simply green. If you look pretty close, you can see a wide range of colors and shades of green. Even a different species of spruce called Colorado blue spruce, which doesn't grow
Very
the
popular.
Best in our
Very
climate,
popular.
But it grows amazingly in a lot of drier climates.
Right.
I mean, it's native to Colorado especially. So that's got a really nice bluish-green color and a more prickly texture, whereas something like a white pine, which is native to this area, has a lot softer texture, a more verdant green, kind of a what I would almost consider an olive green type of thing.
I could call it an olive green.
Yeah, it's just something to pay attention to when you're looking at conifers. Just remember they're not all simply green.
Right.
You can add a lot more impact to your landscape by being specific about which type of conifer you select for your landscape.
And I kind of want to go off that as long as we're talking about conifers. Let's a common distinction that I feel the average person makes, and I made this mistake too my entire life up until my formal education, is the difference between when we talk about a pine tree and a spruce tree. I think that a lot of people really like to group everything with needles into that's a pine tree. And that's just simply not the case. So for our average listener out there, if you can picture what a Christmas tree looks like, and not even a real Christmas tree, but a fake Christmas tree. It's got this pyramid shape,
pyramid.
It's really full, it's really densely branched, and it's got short needles. That is a spruce tree. If you see
in
general, right? I'm going to make
Firs
a big generalization
pretty
here.
Pretty similar, but yeah,
right.
Generally.
In general, a lot of people plant spruce trees because they like that full, pyramidal, evergreen, beautiful, beautiful tree, and they're great wind blocks. I mean, mm-hmm. if you got a northern facing wall at your home, I'm going to highly recommend you put some evergreens on that side, specifically spruce, because it'll save you a fortune in heating, it's gorgeous, and they're windbreak. So now, when I say pine, Mr. Stewart, how would we describe a pine tree in comparison to that pyramidal, full, dense Christmas tree appearance of spruce tree?
You know, at a distance, unless you're really familiar with the various species, it's pretty difficult to tell. But the easiest way to tell is get up close to your tree and look directly at the branches. If you can find needles that are in clusters or bundles, that means it's a pine.
And so when we say clusters, we're talking about more than one needle coming out of more than once in one single spot.
Right.
Because with spruce, you have one needle coming out of the stem and you just have bunches of them. They're individually attached. Mm-hmm. But with the pines, like Mr. Sherwood said, you have that cluster of them all coming from one point on the branch.
Right. And these clusters come in different numbers of needles depending on the species. So to go back to my earlier example of white pine, they have clusters of 5 needles, whereas red pines have clusters of 2 needles. So it could have different numbers of needles in the cluster, but if it has a cluster of needles, you know for sure it's definitely a pine.
And so, besides the white spruce, which we're going to talk about later, and we'll get really into spruce, a couple of really great pines for species selection in this area. For the average homeowner, if you want a standout tree, a white pine is a great choice. Now, there's some issues there with diseases, so maybe don't put it too close to your house, but white pines are beautiful. And I personally really, I think Scotch pines are very underplanted. They are just really cool trees. They're not the biggest trees, so if you're a guy with a small yard, you know, but you want that really cool pine look, Scotch pine, you're going to have a gorgeous orange bark to it that is just stands out from all of the other different pine trees, that it's just this bright orangish color, and it's got magnificent branching. It doesn't get too tall. You know, it's just a great tree for probably that guy that's in town and wants a pine tree in his yard, but doesn't want to have that 200-foot monster that could fall and crush his house, you know?
Yeah,
what about you, Mr. Sherwood? What other pines do you probably think are planted pretty often out in these parts of the
United States, a lot of red pine, which are also called Austrian pine.
Yep.
They're pretty common around here. They get pretty tall, but that's not really a bad thing. Depending on where you put it. Yeah, as long as it's in the right location, a red pine is great.
Don't put it under a power line.
Right, right. That's a topic for our later episode.
It's a topic for another podcast.
But yes, definitely keep in mind the height, final height of a tree when planting.
So maybe now we'll get into what if a guy wants something of beautiful flower blossoms. You want a tree in your yard that as soon as spring hits up here, and it's warm enough, stuff is going to bust out into bloom. And I'm going to go ahead and take the lead on this one. Guy can't go wrong with a flowering crabapple tree.
Absolutely.
Not only are they absolutely gorgeous in the spring, but they are a fantastic pollination tree. If you're a guy that wants an apple tree in your yard, you should plant a crabapple tree. You got to plant more than one apple tree in your yard if you're going to expect to get fruit. And crabapple will provide the pollen that's necessary to get your fruit tree producing fruit. And you get, with the normal crab apples, you get a beautiful pink and purplish flower color.
They come in white too.
They come in white now. Yeah, they're doing some crazy things with breeding the colors for that. So that would be my guess. Now that they're a little bit messy, I'll warn you, if you're one that likes a clean grass cut yard in the beginning of spring.
However,
crabapple might not be for you. But
there are particular cultivars of crabapple, though, that don't produce the actual crabapples.
Correct.
So you can get all of the great spring blooms without any of the mess if you choose the right cultivar.
You'll still get a little mess with the blooms, but you won't get the fruit. And that's where a lot of people get turned off on the crabapples, and that's why they now breed a crabapple tree that doesn't have fruit, is because people came in and started saying, hey, I got like 20 pounds of fruit scattered around my yard that I can't eat, and it's a mess. It's getting, the birds are coming in, it clogs up lawnmowers. But no, they got quite a few species going on. And
that spring snow was spring the snow cultivar crab. I was referring to. If you're interested in that fruitless crab apple,
and that's a white flowering one in the spring for the most part. That's why they call you spring snow. Real clever name, guys. But so that's a pretty badass tree. I've had the convenience of working with that one a couple times in my work at Hoffman and McNamara Nursery out in Hastings, Minnesota. Got to prune a bunch of them and see them all flower in the spring, and it is really cool. You know, it's a showstopper tree. If you put that on the corner of your house, it's gonna attract some attention there in the spring.
Absolutely. And another thing that's really good to think about with these crab apples and other big flowery trees is that they are great for pollinators. As far as bees go, I mean, they're really they're lacking on pollen to eat these days and habitat. Right. So anything we can do to help them out with some great flowering crab apples and other flowering trees, they're going to love it. They really need that right now.
Especially in those urban areas, guys. We're gonna have an entire podcast dedicated to urban forestry, if not more than one, because of the the absolute critical importance that trees in an urban setting provide. It's absolutely critical, but that's another topic for another day. What do you think, Mr. Sherwood? Have we hit most of the stuff on species selection there?
Well, let's give them another couple ideas for flowering trees other than crabapple.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Let's keep going on that. What do you got in mind?
I had in mind serviceberry. Yes. I think serviceberries are excellent. They bloom again early spring, similar time as the crabapples. A little bit later, though. I think a few weeks later, if I remember correctly, from last year. And, yeah, they're very amazing. They're anything from a small to medium-sized shrub all the way up to a small tree, depending on the species that you choose and depending on the cultivar of that species even. They're very versatile. They can be planted anywhere because of their range and sizes.
Right.
Can be used for a lot of different things. And, again, they're just beautiful trees. You know, those flowers are just showstoppers, really.
Oh, yeah. They bring the house down. Now, I'm going to mention another option here. And you might, you know, there's maybe some controversy as to whether this is an actual tree, but you guys are going to find out quickly. I like tiny trees. I'm a bonsai enthusiast, and I also like tiny trees in the yard. So, the hydrangea trees. I love them. I consider them a tree because they are, you know, they have a tree form. They sell them like a tree. And Mr. Sherwood's going to come in here as the hydrangea expert and probably disagree with me. What do you got? I saw you raising your hand over there.
Okay. No disagreement, but I do want to clarify. There's only one species of hydrangea that can be grown as a tree in our climate here.
Correct.
And that is the panicle hydrangea.
You'll only get the panicles, and that's in the northern climate. But
right. The other hydrangeas can be grown here, but they're only shrubs.
Correct. You can only get the shrub for them. So, but you got that panicle hydrangea tree, and if you're looking for something that, you know, maybe you're one of these guys who lives in a cookie-cutter house. And you see, you guys know what I'm talking about. The developments you see where every house is kind of the same, and you know, there's nothing wrong with that. One guy's dream's another guy's nightmare. But if you want something that's going to just provide color all summer and be a really cool thing, because you don't see a lot of hydrangea trees. I think I know of one in town here in River Falls that I see, and every time I see it, I'm really impressed. It's a gorgeous tree. It's a great option for you if you don't want to have a big tree in your yard, because they don't get very tall. They're not really messy, they're pretty low maintenance, and they have these big, gorgeous blooms on them all throughout summer, and they'll just provide you with a really nice eyepiece for your house.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. They're a great way to set your landscape apart from everybody else's. You know, again, like Jay just said, they're relatively uncommon to be grown as a tree form like that.
I do see them in gardens sometimes, and that's another cool thing I like to advocate is people planting trees in there. If the site is right, put a tree in your garden. If that hydrangea tree, my mother has one in her flower garden, and it's gorgeous. It fits in perfectly. She's got a couple of hydrangea shrubs around it too, and just excellent color, really, really excellent color. But with that, maybe let's get into our species of the week, huh?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's start some white spruce here.
White spruce, and let's go ahead and do a scientific name. From time to time, you'll hear us using scientific names, and to clarify, that's just the Latin name of the species. So if I want to talk about white spruce with someone in China who doesn't speak English but they know plants, I can say Picea glauca, and we know that we're talking about the same plant. So just to clarify for our listeners out there, scientific name means the Latin name that's used worldwide to identify these plants for us. So Picea glauca, the white spruce, Mr. Sherwood, why don't you tell us a little bit about the background, the uses, and just in general, you know,
yeah.
What is that white spruce that we're talking about here?
Okay, yeah, white spruce is a species of tree that's native to North America over a really broad range of the continent
very,
here.
Very broad range.
All the way from, I think its southern limit is somewhere down in the south, like southern United States, and it...
Yeah, I can't give you a state for sure, but...
I'm not 100% clear on that.
Probably not Texas. If we got to draw a definitive line somewhere, probably not Texas. But yeah. I bet you could, if you really wanted to, you could go on the old Google internet and look that up for yourself and see if you want to grow up. But in general, if you're anywhere above Colorado, grow the white spruce.
And they go all the way up into Canada.
All the way up. There's the mostly zone 2 hardy, I think, is what I'm reading here. Yep.
They're a great, widely adapted tree.
That's pretty high up there for those of you who know their zones. I mean, zone 1, you're in the North Pole.
Yeah, pretty much.
So zone 2, you're getting pretty close. Oh, yeah. So give us some. Okay. Give us some real cool specs about this tree.
Yeah, this is a pretty tall tree, 40 to 60 feet at maturity, sometimes taller, even up to 100 is not unheard of. But it takes a real long time for them to get that tall.
Not a really fast-growing tree.
Right. They'll grow maybe a foot per year if they're happy,
I'd call them moderate to slow-growing tree. Yeah,
that's accurate.
You're not like an oak, but you're not really putting on a whole lot of growth every year.
Right. And they got really small cones. So they're about 1 to 2 inches long. They're pretty tight and dense. They don't really open up very much.
Right.
And, the buds are small. They're not super distinctive, I don't think. But they're small, kind of pointy buds. The needles are roughly green, but they vary even throughout the species range, from that greenish blue almost to a similar color as the Colorado blue spruce, all the way into that deeper green. So as far as that goes, there's quite a wide variety of color for white spruce. Just because it's called white spruce, the name doesn't really mean much as far as that goes.
That's where we're going to continue to probably rip on whenever we hear common names. Some of the silly names for common names that really make the necessity for scientific names that much more important, because common names can be very misleading.
They tend to confuse things.
Yeah, but they change. Yeah. You know, if you're over in Europe, a white spruce is probably not even known of. Maybe it's not even a thing. I don't know. But if I talk about a Picea glauca, I know we're on the same page. So.
Yeah, that's right.
Where would I plant a white spruce, Mr. Sherwood? Where is that really gonna do me the most benefit, you think?
Somewhere out in the open. Definitely not too close to a building, because again, like I said, they get pretty tall and decently wide. I'd say probably about 30-foot spread when they're at maturity. But yeah, anywhere that you have enough room for it, and a relatively sandy soil, somewhere with full sun, don't plant them underneath another tree.
Maybe not like shade.
But yeah, otherwise, I mean, they're very, very adaptable. They'll thrive in many
locations. I think it's a great species to start out with. It's an all around good one. And with that, I'm gonna kind of elaborate now on the white spruce. There's a variety of white spruce, and I know a lot of people out there probably know it. The Black Hill spruce. It's Picea glauca, variety densata. Now, this is a variety of the White Hill spruce. So it's not the same. It's only in the same genus.
It's
species.
The same species, but it's just a naturally occurring variety.
We won't get too far into that for you guys, because that might bore you to death. Let's just keep going here. So the Black Hill spruce, it's a naturally occurring variety of white spruce, and judging by the name, this one you'd actually know. Native to South Dakota. So some of the kind of cool things there is that it grows very, very well in a monoculture. Now, I don't advocate for monocultures very much, because a disease comes through, wipes out, and kills all your trees. But with Black Hill spruce, it's mostly seed propagated, if not...
They're only seed propagated
right now.
Almost only
seed propagated, because they have relatively stable genetics. So that gives you a little bit better in the monoculture. You got a little bit more diversity there. But another thing is that they're going to grow on a wide variety of soils. Acidic soils, high pH soils, we'll get into that too in site selection, what pH is and why those little numbers are so important. But Black Hill spruce is one that commonly, if you're seeing a spruce tree planted for landscaping purposes, I'd say about 80% of them are probably Black Hill spruce.
And I'd say, besides the big, mature ones, likely most of the younger ones tend to be Black Hill spruce.
You go to a tree auction in Minnesota, and I don't know if you've ever been to one, but mostly all they're selling there is Black Hill spruce as far as evergreen trees go. Because they are absolutely just cultivating the crap out of it right now. It's
yeah, they're pretty popular.
They're very popular.
And there's good reason. There is. They're a fantastic tree.
It's a great tree. You get about 30 to 60 feet high, so they're a little bit smaller than your white spruce. And I think
the name Densata.
Exactly. And I think another thing there is another common reason these can be planted for landscaping purposes is they only get about 15 to 25 feet wide. Now, that seems pretty big, but in the terms of the spread of a tree, that's relatively small. That's, right. You know, for a full-size crown width, by the way, that's pretty compact. Again, Densata, the name, it tells us that it's a compact tree. And so if you want to plant this in your yard, you know, you can plant it pretty close to the house. Like I say, if you plant them in a line, they make a great windbreak. If you got a northern exposed wall, if you're trying to keep your neighbor from looking in your damn window all the time, man, I mean, in town there, you guys, they pack these houses together so close, you want a little bit of privacy, you know, if you got 20 feet in between the houses, 25 feet, talk to your neighbor and be like, hey, let's put up some trees, or maybe don't talk to them, you know, that's up to you, but,
There's skinnier trees for a screen like that.
You got some options too, real tight spot there. You know, in theory, this could work. So
yeah. If the space is big enough, yeah, right. White spruce, right. Black Hill spruce is great for that. And I'd say one more thing that really sets apart the Black Hill spruce from the standard white spruce is going along with that short stature, the compact form, is they generally have a nicer habit. They're tighter branching, and therefore they just look more like that typical Christmas tree shape that a lot of people seem to without having to prune.
You nailed it on the head there. A lot of people like that Christmas tree look, like I was talking about, and that is a Colorado Black Hill spruce. Excuse me.
Black Hill spruce.
I'm not a blue spruce. Blue spruce have a pretty good form too, but
they do.
But Black Hill spruce really emboldens that Christmas tree look that so many people are looking for. I know we got them. My parents planted them all over our property. Just incredible amounts, and like I said, I'm not a huge monoculture guy, but they do grow really, really well together, and they're not gonna really, you know, shade out a bunch of other trees either.
Right.
And they can handle a bunch of other trees growing in the same vicinity. You know, they play really well with other people's and trees. So
absolutely, that's true.
It's just a great tree, and it's a great windbreak, and you want to plant that in full sun for sure. Now, this is kind of funny, too. Black Hill spruce, Mr. Sherwood, off the top of your head, you would probably think that's a little bit more drought-tolerant than the White Hill spruce, white spruce.
That would have been my first guess.
You know, that was mine, too, but that's where we're both wrong. It is actually a little bit less drought-resistant than the typical white spruce. So, you know, there you go. Back to the whole genetic diversity amongst the original species, man. White spruce just takes the cake on it. But it's still very drought resistant. I should point that out. We grow it on sand, and it does just fine. So
right.
As long as you're getting some rainfall and you're not living in Texas, you shouldn't have any issues with it drying up too quick on you.
Nope, that's right.
But anything else on the Black Hill spruce you think I'd miss there, Mr. Sherwood? I mean,
you know, I can't really think of anything.
You can only go so in-depth into a tree in one of these podcasts.
Yeah.
Man, we could sit here all day. But
I mean, we could just keep babbling, but yeah, we don't want to bore people.
Yeah, I think that's where we draw the line. And
mm-hmm.
I want to thank you all for tuning in. This is our first podcast, and we hope to have many more. We're hoping to get on some kind of a schedule here one of these times and start releasing them
regularly,
weekly or monthly, you know, wherever, bi-weekly, every third day of the third month, you know, who knows, but this one's getting released on Arbor Day specifically because, you know, what better time to release something than on a day specifically off honoring trees. And
and while we're talking about Arbor Day, if you guys end up looking to plant a tree, visit arborday.org. They have a whole lot of articles on here.
What was that website again, Mr. Sherwood?
arborday.org.
Perfect.
Even if you just Google Arbor Day, I'm sure it'll pop right up. They've got a great, great tree selection program on here where you can type in your zip code, so it'll come up with the list of trees that grow in your zone. You can tell it what type of tree you're looking for. You can tell it specifically more about your site, and it'll even give you a list of trees that are perfect just for that site. So
awesome.
It really makes the whole thing easy. Definitely something to check out when it comes time to plant a tree.
Yeah, the internet is not just for trolling Facebook, Mr. Sherwood. It's it's a great resource if you know what you're looking for on websites like that. Really embolden the scientists and all of us, because it makes makes planting trees easy. No one's got an excuse anymore. So.
That's right.
With
the
that,
is
I'd,
a friend for resources.
I'd love to thank all of you for joining us on our first podcast here, and I hope you come back to us. You know, I hope that this can be a part of your life, and maybe it'll educate you a little bit, and
at least get you thinking about trees.
Get you thinking of these magical trees that are everywhere around you, hopefully. And you know, we like to have fun on here. And if you got something you really want to hear from us, you're like, hey, you know what, Jay and Andy, man, I want to hear you talk about this, you know? Shoot us an email, let us know. We'll have an email address posted on our site sometime here. Not right now, but, you know.
Well, by the time we get
these
episodes up. By the
time we get the first couple released here, we'll have an email little deal there for you. You can send us your questions, comments, requests, tell us we don't know what we're talking about. I don't care. We got pretty tough.
We'd love your input. We'd love your opinion. We want to know what you guys think about the show.
So with that, happy Arbor Day, guys. Keep it peachy. And this has been Treetop Talks with Andy and Jay. Hope you all have a nice day.
See you guys next time.